Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on regarding marriage licenses when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, this information about all of us is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry is obtaining all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org. O-R-G, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, in this concluding program, we're going to talk about this thing of the marriage license. Remember, we're talking to a young woman here by the name of Kim, sent me a letter, and she said, I'd like to know more about this marriage license. We're trying to get information, couldn't find it anywhere. Do you know of any reason why I should not get a marriage license? And I said, yeah, there's 32 reasons why I don't have one. And I pointed out that I'm not trying to dissuade you people from getting marriage licenses. I'm just going to tell you, here's why I didn't get one. Here's some of the reasons why I think it's a pretty poor idea. There's a connecting link between you and the state when you get this marriage license, and it's called the guardian-ward relationship. There's three kinds of marriages. Remember, we've got the civil law marriage with a marriage license, got a common law marriage, which isn't much different, and then we've got the patriarchal marriage, which is the Hebrew form of marriage called patriarchal. We talked a little bit last time about who owns this bride in a patriarchal marriage. It's the father who owns the bride, and he is selling the bride to the groom with a bride price, and then converts it to the dowry, and then she walks off with the dowry. Now, why does a female walk off with the dowry? Well, under Hebrew law, females own property, and it's the only civilized society on planet Earth where females own property. Tuck that one away in your hearts. Think about that. Now, people complain about, well, you're just making merchandise out of this girl. You're selling her. Yeah, that's true. I don't deny it. Now, there's a corresponding benefit that comes from that. And that's because when God created Adam and Eve in the garden, he made the man the head over the female, the head over the woman. When you're going to run a ship, you got to have one captain. We don't run ships by committee. There's a dictator here. Families are run by dictators. Governments are run by dictators. God, the creator of the universe, is a dictator. Your daddy was a dictator. My dad explained that to me. He said, well, I'm a king. I'm King Edward, and your mother's Queen Mildred, and you're the subject. I make the laws. Your mother implements the laws, and you shut up, sit down, fold your hands, and do what you're told. Well, I didn't care much for that dictatorship called the Gordon family. And I got up, got on my high horse, and I said, well, I'm leaving this place. I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm going to get freedom. That's what I want, freedom. So I went out and I got my freedom. All right, now females want to do this too. They want to get up and they want to get out. They want their freedom. Well, unfortunately for all you girls out there, girls, you know, can own property. You got a right to property. You can own that. And if you'll go to Proverbs chapter 31, you'll find this Proverbs woman. She's out here buying and selling land, and she's buying and selling and doing business and hiring people. I got a wife like that. She's out here buying, selling, and trading, and she owns her property. And this is called strict property rights. Under Hebrew law, a female has strict property rights. And Kim wanted to know, well, how do I get protected from this? You know, well, it's because you own strict property rights. And so the way this works is, with my wife, for instance, everything that my wife owns is her property. And half of what I own is her property. How do you like that for property rights? And so all you men out there, just eat your hearts out. Because there's a requirement here. A female cannot be required to work to support her family. She has to be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. That's a benefit that you ladies receive because your husband is your dictator and your owner. Women cannot be compelled to serve in the military. That was tested in 1986. The Now people got up on their high horse and they went to the Supreme Court and said, we want military conscription for women. They said, no way, Jose. I mean, women cannot be drafted into the military. Bottom line. And then the third thing, that is, you can't be compelled to work to support your family, can't be compelled to defend your husband, and there's a third benefit you get over here. Let me see if you're not responsible for your debts. So whenever your husband sues you for a divorce, he always puts an ad in the paper and he says, I'm no longer responsible for Mabel's debts. Mabel doesn't put an ad in the paper and say, I'm not responsible for Tom's debts. That's because she never was. Okay, now these are the three compensators that you get for being chattel property. And your husband over here has the power to marry more than one woman. I don't know if you knew this or not, but God is a polygamist, married to two wives. One was called Israel, the other Judah. And if you'll look in the scripture, there are 24 cases of polygamy. 24 cases of polygamy. David had six wives. Jacob had four. Abraham had three wives. Now, polygamy comes in two forms. There's polygamy, and there's polygemy. You look those up. One of them is the kind of polygamy that David practiced, where he had six wives all at the same time. And then there's another form of polygamy where you have six wives, but you have them one at a time with a divorce or death in between. Abraham was a polygamist who had three wives. And he had one wife, Sarah, and then he had a second wife, Hagar, and he had a third wife, Keturah. Two of these women he had at the same time, Sarah and Hagar. Hagar was not a wife, but rather she was a concubine. Well, she was a wife, but she was a concubine wife. A lot of times people want to know, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is a concubine does not inherit. Because in marriage, there's another very important aspect to marriage, which is called inheritance. So when we look at the third plank to the Communist Manifesto, it calls for the abolition of all right to inheritance. Whoa, wait a minute. That's the opposite to the Ten Commandment program here, kids. Because the scripture calls for inheritance, and you'll see that in Numbers chapter 36. Numbers chapter 36. Can a female inherit in Israel? And the answer is yes. Females have property rights, and females inherit. Now eat your heart out. And the reason for that is because it's a law, it's a statute created by God Himself. It's another one of your compensators for having your husband over here as the captain of the ship. Now you're the first mate, but you ain't the captain. And so as a result of that, there are these compensators that have been added in. And these are burdens placed upon men. So, you know, men, eat your heart out. That's the way life is. You got to support this woman from the cradle to the grave. So, well, you know, not from the cradle, but from the time you marry her until she dies. And when you die, she's going to take it all. Got that? And this thing of inheritance is a part and parcel with this thing of marriage. And so if you get a marriage license, you have community property. If you marry with a common law marriage or with a patriarchal marriage, this is the contract that eliminates the state. The state doesn't have a claim to your property. Well, not through marriage. They may have a claim to your property based upon your birth certificate and some other guardian ward relationship, but not from marriage. So government wants to get involved in this marriage thing in the worst way, because it's the opening step. As soon as they get that marriage license, now they got a one-third interest. Well, they go step by step, and now they take you in with the marriage license to the birth certificate. Now they own the children. Now they've got to support the children, so now they can tax you for welfare benefits. Now they can bring in statutes and bring in things like inheritance laws so that they can divide up the inheritance. And this brings us now to this thing called parens patriae. Parens patriae. And parens patriae is feudalism. Listen to this. The origin of the doctrine of parens patriae and the law can be traced to medieval and late medieval English chancery courts, where it played an important role in maintaining the structure of feudalism. And that's what you're practicing here with the marriage license. It's feudalism. Now, I'm not opposed to feudalism any more than I'm opposed to communism or socialism or capitalism. I mean, you know, these are all political ideologies that people subscribe to. And if that's what you want to do, well, you know, get after it. But I took a look at them and I said, I don't think those are very good for George Gordon. It's kind of like the income tax, you know. I'm not opposed to people paying income tax. I just looked at it and said, I don't think it's good for me. So I opted for the alternative to the income tax, which is called tithing. And when you pay your income tax, you're doing obeisance. You're worshiping your master, the United States of America. And when you pay your tithe, you're worshiping your master, the creator of the universe. You know, God, Elohim, the creator. And these are choices that you have to make, Kim. You know, you're an adult now. If you're contemplating marriage, now it's your turn to make some decisions. Now, mom and dad are important decision makers in your life when you're a little kid, you know, from zero up to about 21. And they will continue to be advisors, and you ought to listen to mom and dad. Don't give them the finger now, because the fifth commandment tells you to honor your father and mother. And just because your mom and dad believe in practicing communism, they believe in practicing marriage licenses in opposition of the Ten Commandment model, doesn't mean that you should dishonor your parents. Now, my dad was a great guy. My mom was a great lady. And they were both practicing communists. And they taught me communism. And I went out and practiced communism until I was 37. And then I took a look at it and I said, hey, wait a minute, I don't think this is a good program. I think I want to make a change here. And my decision was to go back to practicing the Ten Commandment model. But that isn't because everybody wants to do that or because I do it, I should convince you that you ought to do that. This program is not for everybody. Freedom is not for everybody. And the Messiah made that very observation. He said, you know, the poor you have among you always. And so some people are poor. Well, some people have to do the labor. Some people have to do the work. I just don't happen to be one of the guys that wants to get out there and do that. And so I like to hire somebody else to do the work. And that's called feudalism. Okay? And so I want to be a feudal master. Now, the state wants to be a feudal master. And the state has accomplished that. In fact, in the state of Washington State, here in America, we have Washington, D.C. You're probably familiar with that. That's our national capital. But we also have a state, a piece of real estate. It's out in the Pacific Northwest, borders on the Pacific Ocean. It's called Washington State. And it's a sovereign, independent country, which has a charter or a membership in an organization called the United States of America. Well, anyway, these Washingtonians out there, they've upgraded the process of feudal ownership of bond servants. And they have a department out there. It's called the Department of Human Resources. Now, when we look up the word resource in the legal dictionary, it's a product used in the manufacturing process, and it's used and consumed. Okay, so a human resource is a person who is used up and consumed in the manufacturing process. And the way that works is that the 13th Amendment here in the United States bars involuntary servitude. So private people like George Gordon cannot own bond servants and slaves. We used to. And then President Lincoln came along and issued what was called the Emancipation Proclamation, which was later codified and then put into our Constitution as the 13th Amendment, which bars private ownership of slaves. Well, bond servitude and slavery comes from God Almighty, the creator of the universe. But, you know, he's kind of old and dumb. And, you know, we humans, we're pretty smart and chic and up to date. And so we came to the conclusion that bond servitude and slavery was bad. So we outlawed it. All right. So what do we have in its place? Well, now the government owns all the people. Yeah, it's Washington State now that owns all the people. That's what we learned from our attorney general in Texas. Yeah, the state of Texas owns you. It owns your children, and it owns you too. You know, so we thought that we had moved forward here in this emancipation process. Women, you know, like to think, hey, now we're somebody. Let me tell you another little story here. Kim, if you marry Nate, you're going to have little babies. You're going to have children. And when you do, you won't own a one of them. Now remember that. You're a woman. No woman on this planet has ever owned a child past tense. No woman on this planet, in any country, anywhere in the world, owns a child to this time, present tense. Or will ever own a child, future tense, on planet Earth. It's against the law. Tain't never been in the past, tain't now, and ain't going to be in the future. Now, there's two entities that can own children. Your husband can own children. And the state can own children. Hell, God himself never claimed to own any children. I mean, the creator of the universe created you and gave you the capacity and the power to own children, you men out there. But he never gave that capacity to females, and he never gave it to the state. Now, the state and all of us joined together in rebellion against our creator, and we said, well, we're going to do that anyway. And we are, and we're doing it. And we use the marriage license as the primary document. Well, okay, you can do that for a while, but then this God every so often goes postal on us. And he's just about to go postal on us again, called the Great Tribulation. So on this doctrine of parens patriae and the fiduciary obligations and state power is a part of Chapter 44 of the Tax and Status Class. very important piece of legal information. I'll give you a couple, three quotations out of it. It goes back in the medieval Europe. And it's being carried forward today in Washington State, and they do it right in front of your face. I mean, they're right up in your face telling you that the state owns these human resources. So when the Weyerhaeuser company needs somebody to go out and work on their tree plantation, they have to go to the state and rent them, and they have to pay the state a fee, and they pay unemployment tax and workman's compensation, Social Security. They pay 14 taxes, I believe it is, and it's 14 taxes to rent that human resource, that bond servant, that slave that the state owns, because private people can't own them anymore. And then that person is used up and consumed in the paper and lumber making business, and then they're retired out. Now, we have to replace those people. And that's where feudalism comes in. That is, you, Kim, and Nate are going to have babies, and then they're going to be passed through the fire to Moloch and then given to the state to give the state a perpetual workforce to work off of, which is called feudalism. Chancery, as an agent of the monarchy, had a duty to assure the orderly transfer of feudal duties from one generation to another, and to ensure that there would be someone available to perform these duties. And the concept of parens patriae was usually invoked in connections with problems of property or guardianship. See how that works? So the state now is your guardian. They own you. And now they're going to direct your education to make you a useful, productive tax slave so that you're a useful, productive member of society, producing revenue for the state. See how simple that is? Revenue for the monarchy, revenue for the king. Here's a couple of three citations from this concept. It says, in some of the colonial statutes, we can see the beginnings of the idea that children are to be protected, not only from poverty, but also from parents who are undeserving. Kim, you and Nate may be undeserving parents, and the state needs to send social lady in to take those children away from you. I mean, it's the way life is. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter here. God never did that. God leaves these children in the possession of their creator. Parents, mothers and fathers are the creator of these children, and they own them under the Ten Commandment model. So I'm suggesting that you might consider this Ten Commandment model, and maybe, if you're a big girl, maybe you and your husband together could own your own children. I know it's a wild new concept, but, you know, think about it. Maybe you could handle that. Lord Redesdale maintained that parents have rights to their children only as a privilege granted by the state, and that the state delegates control over children to their parents as a trust, and that it does so because parents usually discharge this trust faithfully on behalf of their children. Now, this is called a sesticui trust. In the trust referred to by Lord Redesdale, the settlor, or the creator of the trust, is the state. The trustee is presumably the child's natural parents. And the beneficiary of the trust, or the sesticui trust, is called the minor child. Now, if that's what you want to do, the marriage license is the first step. Birth certificate is the second step. Social Security account number is the third step. Then we are prepared to practice heavy progressive income tax, central banking, Social Security, abolition of all right to property, free education for all children in public school. I mean, you know, now we're ready. We're ready to become civil law citizens under Roman mercantile law. Now, in the fiduciary relationship between parents and the state, it's analogous to a discretionary trust. Then, within certain limits, parents are free to raise their children according to their own personal preferences. So, within the guidelines that the state legislature sets down, you will be free to raise your children according to your own personal preferences. What happens if you decide, for whatever reason, that you want to home educate or homeschool your children? Well, then the state comes along and says, "Well, but we've got our rules. And if you're going to homeschool, then you got to toe the mark and fulfill our obligations," like Pennsylvania. Or let's suppose that you decide, for whatever reason, that you don't think that vaccinations are good for your children. And the state comes along and says, no, Kim, you and Nate, you don't make decisions like that. Now, those are important decisions that your guardian will make for you, and we're the state, and we're going to do that for you. Well, who are these guardians in the state? Well, it's the medical establishment. It's Merck and Pfizer at the pharmaceutical level. And they send lobbyists into Congress, and they say, hey, we got to have laws that require compulsory vaccination for all children in public school. And so if that's what you want to sign up for, that's what marriage licenses are all about. Sounds simple, Leonard? No fuss, no muss. Now, the belief that children themselves have no rights under the trusteeship for that model perhaps stems from the assumption that trusts are a type of contract. It is, however, a well-established principle in the law that trusts may be enforced by a beneficiary who is not a party to it, while only the actual parties to a contract can normally sue upon it. And so here's your children under this program. Let's suppose your child grows up, he's 22 years old, and he didn't have any vaccinations because you determined that he shouldn't have vaccinations. And he says, hey, wait a minute. I got polio and I'm crippled now because my parents didn't get me a polio vaccine. Therefore, I'm going to sue my parents and I'm going to take from my parents. That's you. That's the babysitters. He can't sue the state. He's going to sue you. That's not common, but it's certainly well known that children sue their parents for breach of fiduciary responsibility. I woke up one day and said, I don't think I want my kids suing me. I'm going to raise them the way I want to raise them. When they get to be 21, if they don't like it, they can change it themselves. I did that. My dad raised me as a communist, and I got to be 37 and woke up one day and said, nah, I think I'll reject communism. I think I'll go practice something else. And so I did. All right. So with that in mind, then, let's take a look at this thing of divorce and the divorce statute of the scripture. Now remember, you wanted to know, well, how can I be protected? All right. The way you're protected, a female is protected in Israel from divorce, is that she owns her own property. She's not dependent upon her husband. I'm married to a woman. She owns her own property. If I died in the morning, it wouldn't affect my wife one iota. She would inherit everything that I leave behind when I die. I could divorce her and take my property out of the marriage, but I can't take her property, nor is she subject to the arbitrary and capricious property disbursement of a divorce judge. How do you like that? And that's because she's dealing in property, not community property, but individual property, her property. And that's why I'm all in favor of females owning their own property, of females having a prenuptial contract going into the marriage. Here's the deal. It's a business. Marriage, Kim, is a business. And when you enter into a partnership, a business, you should have a written contract. And you ought to write that contract. You and Nate and your mother and father ought to sit down and write out a contract. How much inheritance is your mother and father going to give you? Are they going to give you houses and apartments and money and gold and bank accounts and stocks and bonds? What in the hell is that to Nate? Is Nate coming into the marriage? Is he bringing in horses and cattle and lands and tenements? If so, that ought to be written up, and that ought to be his property. Now, when you and Nate are working together and you're creating property, whose property is that? Well, you ought to have a written agreement, shouldn't you? Because when you have a divorce, You're going to have a commissioner, a judge, a divorce judge, a family court judge, and he's going to decide what you get and what Nate gets and what the state gets. You know, and so if you want some bureaucrat to make that decision for you, marriage license is the way to go. If you want to have input into that, then you ought to write that contract yourself. Nate, if you want to have some input into that, alimony and child support, where do these children go when there's a divorce? Well, the children under Hebrew law belong to the father. And I know this is a shocker, you know, for most people. They sit there and they say, well, how in the hell can that be? And there's a case here called Hunt versus Hunt. Hunt versus Hunt. I'm looking for it right here. There it is. It was decided in Iowa in 1854, and it's the common law rule. Common law is synonymous with the Mosaic law rule. The common law. It goes back to Moses, and it was articulated by Alfred the Great, codified by Alfred the Great about 872 AD. It was further codified in Magna Carta. It's exemplified in Blackstone's commentaries and Kent's commentaries. It's a part and parcel of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. It's the common law. It's the law of the commoners. It's the law of God. You know, such as things like freedom of free exercise of religion, and at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall the matter be established, and so on. Well, in this case called Hunt versus Hunt, which we'll cover here when we come back from this mid-course reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour, an editorial review, may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about regarding marriage licenses. If you'll remember the story about Tamar, remember from Sunday school, Tamar was a Hebrew princess, and she married a man by the name of Ur. His name was Er. not the emergency room. Now it was just her. Now, Judah had married a black woman. He practiced miscegenation. And that was against the law. And he had three sons, Onan, and Canaan. Onan, and Shelah. Shelah was his name. And this, these three boys were mulattoes. They were half black and half white. Now, under the inheritance provision of Genesis 49:10, Judah, who was a very wealthy man, was entitled to inherit, and he did, and his inheritance included the scepter promise. His heirs were going to rule over the other tribes of Israel. And it was called the scepter promise, Genesis 49:10. But, no bastard can enter the congregation to the 10th generation. And now Judah has created three interracially mixed offspring called bastards. The Messiah, Jesus Christ, is going to be born from Judah. And he's got three bastard sons. That can't happen. It's against the law. So there's got to be a remedy for this. So God, the Creator, killed the firstborn son, the son that inherits the double portion, inherits the birthright. He killed him. He's dead. Out of the way. This triggers a law called the duty of the husband's brother statute. That's in Deuteronomy chapter 25. The duty of the husband's brother. Let's see if I've got that citation here. I'll flip a few pages here. Yeah, here it is. Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 through 10. Now, Onan, who is the second born, is already married and has children. Evidently didn't want to practice polygamy and didn't want to take Tamar on as a wife. Now, remember, this duty of the husband's brother is for the purpose of moving the inheritance from Judah through the firstborn to Tamar. Now, Tamar, remember, is not a member of this family. She's a Hebrew. She's a princess. She's married into the family. And come to find out, the duty of the husband's brother is rejected by Onan, so God killed Onan. Now, both of them are dead. But there's a third son. This third son is named Shelah. Now, he's 9 years old, according to Josephus. And Judah said to Tamar, "Now you go back to your father's house and put on your widow's garments. And when this boy reaches maturity, I will give him to be your husband." So Tamar goes back to her father's house. Now you were wondering, how would I be provided for if Nate divorced me or died? And the answer is, you would go back to your father's house. That's what the law provides. Until you remarry. Now, this boy, Shelah, grows up, and Judah doesn't give him to Tamar. And Tamar now is about to be aced out of this inheritance. She married into the family. Her inheritance transferred from her family now to Judah's family, and Judah is about to ace her out of it. Now, this is my great-great-great-great-great-grandma, Tamar. Pretty wise old lady, see? So one day she says, "Well, what am I going to do about this? You know, I married into the family. I'm entitled to this inheritance. My husband is killed by God. And now they won't produce, or they won't perform the duty of the husband's brother and give me a son who can take the inheritance. And now they're about to ace me out in favor of somebody else." And so she dresses up like a prostitute, like a whore. And Judah, the patriarch of the family, is out shearing sheep, see? And so he's out looking for a little fun and frolic on Friday night. And so he goes out and he sees this whore and he says, hey, sweetheart, I'd like to get a little on Friday night. And so she says, well, okay, that sounds pretty good to me. You know? And she said, here's what I want. And he didn't have the money with him. So he said, I'll give you my staff and signet ring as collateral for the two goats that I'm going to send to you tomorrow. So she goes in, she has sex with him. And as a result of this, she conceived, and she had twin sons, whose name was, their names was Phares and Zerah. Phares and Zerah. And then our patriarch Judah, you know, big Christian fellow that he was, he found out that his daughter-in-law was pregnant, and he accused her. He said, "Now you've played the harlot, and we need to take you out and stone you to death for being a whore." And she says, "Well, that's true." She never denied it. And she said, "Now by the man whose staff and signet ring these are, am I with child, and he needs to be stoned with me. So let's both of us go get stoned, Judah." And when he saw his staff and signet ring, he said, "Now you've been more righteous than I." And so this is the scriptural first example of grace over law recorded in the Bible. Isn't that just real special? See, this clown figured, we'll take this woman out and stone her to death. And this is the way religion has worked against women from that day to this. If a woman is having sex with President Clinton, she, Monica Lewinsky, is a slut. But the president, Bill Clinton, is a stud. Now, where in the hell do we get this kind of double hypocritical standard for women and men in Christianity in America? Huh? Where did you get that? You didn't get that from God. You didn't get that from the Creator. You got that from your Christian theology. That's where that comes from. And that's horsepucky, pure and simple. But to get on with the story, you wanted to know, well, what happens to me? The answer is you go back to your father's house until you remarry. Just that simple. Now, first of all, you ought to have some wealth of your own that comes from your own dowry. And if you don't, well, then you go back to your father's house until you remarry. After all, your dad created you, and he has that duty. Men, wake up out there. We have duties. I know it's kind of a crazy, wild concept, but yeah, it's true. Men have to take care of their women from the cradle to the grave. And fathers, when you produce these female offspring, you're stuck with those little bread snappers until they die, unless you can get rid of them. And typically the way we get rid of them is we marry them off. Now, sometimes you have a less well-endowed daughter. Now, I don't know what you look like, Kim, but let's suppose that instead of being an Elizabeth Taylor, you're kind of a plain woman, plain girl. I can remember when I was a boy growing up, there were some girls that were not beautiful. They weren't the sweet chicks, you know, that were on the cheerleading squad. They were just kind of plain jeans. And so they weren't as popular at the school dances, and they just weren't, you know, as popular as Elizabeth Taylor would be. See? And so what we have to do then, we don't pay a bride price, we pay a dowry to get rid of her. And so the father might place a dowry on a daughter and say, "Look, if you will marry this girl, I will pay you $100,000 to take her." Well, I mean, hell, it's either that or you got to support her for the rest of her life. Now, I had one here come back home, and she had one little girl, and I kept her here for 2 years until I married her off again, and it cost me at least $10,000 a year to keep her. God, I got to adding that up, and I said, this girl's, I think she was 20 years old. I said, my God, if that girl was to live to be 75, that's 55 years. At $10,000 a year for 55 years, that's $550,000. This girl's going to cost me $500,000. I got to get rid of her. So, you know, I married her off, and my daughter was a pretty good-looking girl, so I got $32,000 for her. You know, that was a pretty profitable girl. But what if she wasn't that good-looking? Well, would I have paid $32,000 to get rid of her in a heartbeat? Of course I would. Now, I say that kind of as a metaphor. You know, every father loves his daughter, even if they're not Elizabeth Taylor quality. You know, you don't have to be a movie star beauty out there, but every woman needs to have a husband. Now, there's another little problem that comes into this. Did you know that females are more prevalent than males I don't know if you knew this or not, but female births, babies when they're born, are stronger than males, and their survival rate is greater, and the number is 51.8 versus 48.2. Am I right with that? 8 and 2 is 10, 8, 9, 10, 5, 4 is 9, is 10. Yep, that's 100%. We have 1.8 more girls, or roughly 2 more girls, born out of 100 people than we do boys. So we got 52 girls and 48 boys. What are we going to do with these extra 2 girls? Ah, here's where polygamy comes in. Some boys can have 2 wives. Now, polygamy is for the purposes of vertically integrated corporations. Let me describe this one to you. One time I had a guy come up from Salt Lake City, had a legal problem with a trucking company that he owned in Page, Arizona. Now, when he came up, he didn't tell me in advance. He just came up to Boise, and we went out to the Elmer's Pancake House, and he introduced me to his wife, and he said, "This is my second wife, Betty." I'd heard that joke before, you know, "This is my second wife, this is my third wife, Betty." And I smiled and I laughed a little bit, and then we sat down, and pretty soon as the conversation went off, he said, "Now my first wife and I had 5 children, and my number one son operates the Murray, Utah Sand and Gravel Company. And my number 2 son operates this business, and number 9 son, and I'm just sitting there listening." And Betty, the second wife, is sitting there dutifully listening. And come to find out, this guy's got 15 sons, 5 wives. And my presumption is, if he had 15 sons, the law of averages says he had 15 daughters. Now, that isn't necessarily true. Jacob had 12 sons and 1 daughter, but typically, you know, if you got 12 sons, you'd have 12 daughters, you know, because they're about 50-50 is about the way the numbers come out. It's actually 51.8 to 48.2 if you want to get real special and technical. And so his number 15 son over here is running the trucking company. We got down to the trucking company problem over there. Now, let me describe what's going on here. This old man is the patriarch of the family. And he has 15 sons who are all operating one business. And each one of these businessmen, they all have wives and sons who work in those businesses. This is a patriarchal family business, which generates about $100 million a year in Salt Lake City, Utah, and the environs around there. One of their operations was in Lovelock, Nevada, and one of them was in Page, Arizona. One of them was in Spanish Fork. They had a dairy ranch or dairy farm in Spanish Fork, Utah. All right. Henry Ford did the same thing. In the civil law, we have the same operation going, and we have this from the biblical law, from the scripture. It's called a vertically integrated corporation. It's a business model. That's why I told you, Kim, marriage is a business. And here's the business portion of it. Here's an example of one of the business forms. It's called polygamy. Polygamy has nothing to do with sex or perversion. It has to do with business, big business. That's what corporations are for. Corporations are for doing big business. That's why we have J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America. Those are big businesses. Now, Henry Ford operated his company, and one day he woke up and he said, "Gee, I spend $30 a ton and I buy a lot of tons of steel to make my automobiles." So he said, "If I owned my own steel company, I would have my steel then at half price." So he went out and bought a steel company in Gary, Indiana. And sure enough, he's paying $30 a ton to buy steel from U.S. Steel, but now he's got his own steel company, and now he can provide steel to himself and his company for $15 a ton. See? One day he wakes up and he says, "Gee, I spend a lot of money hauling my iron ore from the Mesabi Range down to my steel mill." So the Ford Motor Company to this day operates 12 ore carriers across the Great Lakes. And then he woke up one day and he says, gee, I spend a lot of money buying iron ore. So he went up to the Mesabi Range and bought his own iron mine. Now, here's Henry Ford and the Ford Motor Company. They mine the iron ore, they haul it in their own ships, and they make steel in their own steel mills, and then they build their own automobiles. That's called vertical integration. And here's exactly what this guy is doing in Salt Lake City. He has a trucking company, and he also has a sand and gravel company. He also operates a cement company in Lovelock, Nevada. Now, the sand and gravel company needs to buy a truckload of cement from the cement company in Lovelock, Nevada. What trucking company do you think they're going to hire to haul stuff up? You think they're going to use Yellow Freight or Barlow Trucking? They're going to use Barlow Trucking. All right. Now, let's suppose we got a grandson over here at one of the operations, and he's 15 years old, and he's looking for a summer job. Where do you think that kid's going to find a summer job? Well, he's going to be bucking bales down there on the family dairy farm down in Spanish Fork, Utah. So the family members work in the family business. Women, children. And there's inheritance that goes on here. Who's going to inherit this? Well, the firstborn son gets the double portion. So the firstborn son that operates the Murray, Utah Sand and Gravel Company. When old man Barlow dies, then the firstborn son's going to come in to the executive office in downtown Salt Lake City. He's going to take it over. That's the way that's going to work. That's why the double portion in inheritance goes to your firstborn child, your firstborn son. Now, in the case of Queen Elizabeth, who actually practices this law, King George VI didn't have any male heirs, and so Queen Elizabeth had to be the heir. And this happens, not very often, but once in a while it happens. And so, let's suppose that you've got females. This is where Numbers chapter 36 comes in. There was a case here in Numbers chapter 36 where there were some daughters, six daughters, and the question arose, can a female inherit in Israel? And the answer is yes, they can. But they have to marry within their own tribe. That's so that the inheritance doesn't become diluted and removed from one family to another. So this thing of marriage and patriarchal family has to do with inheritance, has to do with dowries and bride prices. It has to do with money. Boys and girls, it has to do with business. And in some cases, vertically integrated, patriarchal. And yes, yes, it's true. Polygamy. Polygamy was created by God Himself. It's the state that came along and outlawed polygamy, not God. It's religion that outlawed polygamy. I didn't make it that way. I just want to tell you that that's the way that works. Now, as I said last time, polygamy is spelled P-O-L-Y-G-E-M-Y. That's where you have six wives, one at a time. Elizabeth Taylor is a polygamist, and she had six husbands, one at a time. That's what the state allows. That's what the state provides for. But in this man's case, this guy is a polygamist. He's got five wives all at the same time. David had six wives all at the same time. That's spelled P-O-L-Y-G-A-M-Y. That's polygamy. And it's not illegal. Now, when females have two, three, or five husbands, that's called polyandry. That's strictly prohibited. You women out there cannot have five husbands. In fact, you cannot remarry a husband. You cannot have sexual relations with two men at the same time. That's the way venereal disease is spread. The female becomes the carrier or the spreader, the agent, because it's the two men. This is why when you see sodomy, sodomites spread disease from male to male. Lesbians do not. You don't see AIDS being transmitted between lesbians. It's transmitted between sodomites. And whores in a whorehouse can sometimes be the vehicle that carries it. Now, the creator of the universe is not as dumb as we give him credit for. Not as dumb as we think he is. And there are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments in the scripture organized into 133 laws. The marriage laws and the divorce laws, along with the inheritance laws, are important laws to follow because that's what makes an orderly society work. And if you want to avoid depressions and recessions, we have to practice these economic laws. If you want to avoid disease, we have to practice these 19 health laws. If you want to avoid poverty, you have to practice economic laws. If you want to have good health, you have to practice the health laws. And it's just that simple. No big mystery about this. Now, there's one more factor in here. I told you about Hunt versus Hunt, remember? Now, the reason that divorce is so uncommon in a patriarchal family is because the father owns the child. Now, listen to this. In consideration of the rights and duties of the father in relation to the child, he could not. This case here, before cited, the People versus Merson, we think fully recognizes this principle. Judge Brunson there, in addition to what is held to be a law on this point by Judge Cowan, says, quote, "The opinion of this court has been repeatedly expressed that by the law of the land," that's called the common law, the law of the land, "the claims of the father are superior to those of the mother." And he also refers to a former opinion sustaining the same doctrine delivered by him in that controversy. This doctrine is maintained by numerous decisions of courts of the highest authority in this country. Hell, that's been an Anglo-Saxon administration in every Anglo-Saxon country for 3,000 years. And it was only overturned recently with the marriage license and with this concept now, this concept that we're going to abolish polygamy, we're going to establish marriage licenses, birth certificates, and we're going to abolish polygamy. Now, if you want to do that, that's fine. You know, go ahead. But when you do that, then you upset the patriarchal civil society formula, Ten Commandment formula. And then you have something to take its place. And we call that the 10 Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And so now you have social lady. She comes in and she directs your children's education. The public school now is the center for nurture and education and direction in a child's life. You parents out there have been reduced to babysitters for the state's children. You produce them because the state is impotent. So the state needs you to produce these live births, and then they want you to pass your seed through the fire to Moloch and give your children to the state. In ancient times, we used to throw one of them in the volcano and keep the rest. Today, we give them all to the state. We give them all to Baal. Now that is prohibited. And that's why I'm opposed, and that's why I run this law school. And that's why I take the time, effort, and energy to explain it in these four programs. Now, we also teach two schools that have a whole lot more in-depth discussion of this subject along with other subjects that are interrelated with it, because this also branches out into income tax and Social Security taxes and on it goes. So if you'd like to know more, Kim and Nate, you be sure to write to us or call. I'd be happy to answer your questions. Glad you wrote me the email, and I hope this has been a benefit to all the rest of you listeners out there. All right, with that, I'm about out of time. Not quite, but just about out of time. So let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, the schedule, and archives, and can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.